Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show It's Movie Time, which airs on Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, the podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
Oh my, that is so sweet. I'm John DeSando.
I'm Taylor Haygood.
And this is Back Talk. And if you couldn't figure it out from our announcer, I think we have a Southern motif going on here for this show. Taylor was born in North Mississippi.
Yep.
But you have a Tennessee background, right?
My dad's side of the family is from Tennessee, and Ripley, Mississippi is right on state.
Tay is an active publisher, and he's a professor at Florida Atlantic University. He is actually an expert in William Faulkner. But today he's selected Tennessee Williams. What's that all about, Tay?
Despite his name, he is a Mississippian also.
He
and Faulkner and Eudora Welty and Richard Wright are the big writers historically from the state.
What do you have for us today?
Hoping we could look at and think about some of the films, some of the great films from Tennessee Williams' plays. And I think they're still amazing films, and I think a lot of people know them, but they're not maybe quite as iconic as Cat on a Hot Tin Roof or Streetcar Named Desire.
Right, or Glass Menagerie. Which, for our audience, I'll bet that's the one most of them have seen. A lot of high school productions.
Right. Well, at least film-wise, I think probably those other two films. There have been a few films of Glass Menagerie. Fugitive Kind. It's based on the play Orpheus Descending, Night of the Iguana, and The Rose Tattoo.
As much as I love what he does in the adaptations, it's almost always the actor and actresses. The vehicle. It seems to be so good for high-class actors.
It really is. And he worked with so many of the great actors. I mean, in these films, Marlon Brando, Anna Magnani, Richard Burton, Ava Gardner. Deborah, throughout his career, he was really working with these just top figures, and he was so dominant, really, in the middle of the 20th century, Tennessee Williams.
And what he did for women, Elizabeth Taylor, for instance.
Of course, Elizabeth Taylor.
As a gay man, he was bringing something new to the stage and then into Hollywood.
Yes, indeed. I think that's a really interesting topic, actually, trying to think about how certain sensibilities and, you know, of course, The Glass Menagerie is so autobiographical, and it's really that opening into understanding, I think, how he brings that background, his own personal background, his life experiences, all of these things into play. They really do play out in these other films and plays as well.
In looking at his filmography and his drama, it's an enormous amount of material. No, he had some losers.
He did.
You know, Pulitzer Prize winner twice.
Indeed.
Both for A Streetcar Named Desire.
Right.
And Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Right.
Fugitive Kind. Here's what he said about Brando.
Okay.
He said, he loves the light. See how the light shines through him. I shouldn't be partial, but he is my favorite one.
Of course, the big breakout was Streetcar, and he had been Stanley Kowalski originally on stage as well. The camera was great to him then. There's this apocryphal story, I don't know if it's true, when Clark Gable was removing his clothing, and it happened one night that the T-shirt sales went down because he didn't have one on, and that they came back when Marlon Brando was in Streetcar Named Desire. When I think about that film, and then later on now The Fugitive Kind, he shows up, and it's a film, the lighting, I think, is so interesting. You have these low lighting moments, and there's this early in the film when he shows up in this Mississippi town. The lighting is from below, and it looks like some kind of German expressionist. I mean, the look of Marlon Brando, I think, is so powerful. As well as with Anna Magnani, I think they make an interesting pair. Really, with all three of these films, there's a kind of image or symbol at the heart of it. You know, the rose tattoo. There's the rose, you know.
Right.
But there's also this animal stuff. So you have Mangiacavalli, Eat the Horse, you know, character that Burt Lancaster plays in.
Yes.
But in The Fugitive Kind, you have the idea of snakeskin, the snakeskin jacket that Brando's wearing. Very young Joanne Woodward comes in, snakeskin. And there's this kind of ideas. Can he shed his snakeskin? You know, it's almost a heavy-handed kind of metaphor in a way.
Oh, he does. He doesn't appear to have any problem with that.
He has no...
The rose, even if her last name is Rose.
He doesn't matter. And, you know, you think about one of your favorites, Flannery O'Connor, is one of the real... it doesn't bother her in the least to get heavy-handed with images and symbols. Pulls it off. A lot of that has to do with his background. Obviously, he was very influenced by Chekhov's playwriting, Tennessee Williams, but he was also his other really big influence was Hart Crane.
Yes.
Who was this incredible poet. That nobody, tragic story. I don't know if enough people really read his work. I think The Bridge is the greatest poem, even better than Leaves of Grass, to be honest.
Okay.
In American history. But we're in Ohio here. There's a Columbus, Ohio. There's a Columbus, Mississippi, which is where Tennessee Williams was from. There's a Cleveland, Ohio. There's actually a Cleveland, Mississippi, you know. But Hart Crane was from Cleveland, Ohio. And there was actually a when I think of Ohio, it's probably the least bohemian place I can imagine.
You think?
But Cleveland, Ohio actually had its own bohemian scene. They had a thing called the Cocoon Club. Yeah. And actually, there's a magic connection. The Otis Lithograph Company, a lot of the artists connected with it, people like William Sumner, amazing modern artists.
All right.
His work is in the Met. But he was very close, and there were a number of these people connected with this Cocoon Club with Hart Crane. And they were amazing. But that Otis Lithograph Company had done a lot of those magic posters and circus posters,
all right, lithographs. Yes.
And even those Frankenstein Universal Pictures posters were done by Otis.
Okay,
the ones
all right.
Marlon, yeah. With,
and beautiful.
Those early ones.
They're
beautiful,
lovely work, illustrations. Yeah. There's a small film out now called Lost and Found in Cleveland.
Oh, I don't know it. I'd like to see that.
It's about these traveling antique shows.
Ah.
Martin Sheen is one of the
stars.
Highly recommended by Ken.
Ah, I will check it out.
Yeah, and I'm trying to, but it's 9:45. That's late for me. That's the only place that's playing it.
I understand what you mean, but I did want to say this about Hart Crane. He was one of the masters of image, and I think to that extent, probably that had a big influence on Tennessee Williams, that he's not afraid just to really go at it with that symbol.
But Taylor, the three movies that we're talking about today are available online.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what do you recommend to our audience in these lesser-known plays? What do you think about a family or anybody going to the or getting this online? Do you think it's yes? Is a yes?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
All right. You think that they're exciting? I think they are.
I think that there's not much on the screen that in our time that really deals with this level of depth and intensity with human emotion.
And it appeals especially to me because I'm a guy who probably started with theater and went to film. I don't know which one I like better.
Yeah,
but there's a theater aspect to his. And they're shot mainly like a play.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, so they're very accessible in that way. But anyway, it's Tennessee Williams. We still have to talk about the Rose Tattoo and the Night of the Iguana and whatever else we like. Taylor Haygood, you've come all the way from Florida. Actually, not. You came from Steubenville.
Yeah.
Right. But anyway, you still made a trek to share your observations about the lesser-known works of Tennessee Williams. At any time when we have it's movie time, we have a chance to do that, or cinema classics. Mm-hmm. And we talked about Fugitive Kind. I thought we could move on to Rose Tattoo. I emphasize Brando in that one.
Right.
And this one,
yeah.
A silly Burt Lancaster.
He is very silly.
What do you think about this one, Rose Tattoo?
Well, I find it visually very confusing. Burt Lancaster was an incredible physical specimen. I mean,
yes.
The guy was unbelievable. He could do amazingly athletic
things.
And I don't know that I've always been the greatest fan of his particular technique. I mean, it's a silly character, Mangiacavalli, in a way, but it's, I guess, he is kind of silly. But I also, it's a little confusing to me visually with him, in some ways, even how he pairs up with Anna Magnani. It doesn't,
yes.
For me, doesn't have the spark that you get between Brando and Anna Magnani.
Yes, thank you, yeah.
I don't think, it's also a little strange to me because it was filmed apparently in Key West. It looks very Key Westy to me. And yet, strangely, they seem to have it somewhere in the vicinity of New Orleans. Maybe they envision it as being around Biloxi or somewhere. I'm not totally sure where this thing is happening, and that's not necessarily a problem, except that so often I feel that a lot of southern places tend to be pretty specific. Certainly Faulkner's Yacht to Potalfa is not fully, it's imaginary, but it's also so closely tied to the real-life space that it's in. So, I don't know, it's kind of a weird for me that way.
Well, what is the tension in this?
Well, of course, there is a certain tension. To me, it's the two Italian actors at the center of it. You know, it's Anna Magnani and her daughter. She's an Italian actress also.
Yes.
And, you know, you can't.
She was nominated, I think. She was nominated for the role.
She may have been. I think Magnani won the award.
Yeah, I think you're right, yes.
And for me, a lot of the tension actually comes between those two. But it's really a vehicle for Anna Magnani, and I think Tennessee Williams wrote that play with her in mind.
Yes, yes, that's what I hear.
And Maggio Cavalla is not, in a way, he's almost an auxiliary character, I think.
You know, when Lancaster comes in, the film, in a way, lights up.
Yes, oh yeah, it's very dark before.
You're right. If you can get over the fact that he's a serious actor who's acting silly,
yeah.
You can see his physicality. You can.
It is
you're
there,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a former acrobat.
Yeah.
And so he and
he was in that trapeze movie, I think.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. I think he went to high school with my aunt. My
really?
Great aunt. Yeah. Right. She has no stories.
Oh, that's too bad.
Right. Yeah. Where do you think Magnani goes with this role? I mean, because she is so much the center of it.
I think she is the center of it. And I think sometimes people might watch it now and feel that it's a little overacted. But I really don't think it is. I feel very convinced by her. And you see this, the pride in her that she's married to, you know, her original husband. And she has so much pride. He's the best
Wayne,
center.
Victor Jory. Oh, boy.
Interesting. Okay. So
he's up in bed.
I
want to
confuse him.
No, you don't, except that he's pretty mean.
Well, yes, right. So then you get, though, Anna Magnani dealing with that, and then the situation of, you know, losing him and then dealing with the fact that he's been involved with this other woman, and then the daughter and how she, the sense of being, trying to hold on to her in a way and trying to protect her. I think it's a really fascinating vehicle for her, really, to present those emotions. Perhaps, I want to say they're overacted. I don't think they are, but maybe she's able to attain almost a level of absurdism. There's a sense in which there's a kind of an absurdism about that film.
I like that. That helps a lot with this. Plus,
Daniel Mann, that's who it was.
Okay,
it was,
all right.
I was thinking like Dean Williams.
Well, how are you going to remember Daniel Mann?
Daniel Mann,
I mean,
yeah.
And I can remember John Huston and Sidney Lumet.
Sidney Lumet, yeah.
Yeah, all right, so
I don't know where he was coming from in terms of his philosophy of directing in this.
Well, what I like about this is his theatrical composure.
Yes, right.
For all they did, because when we get to, and we will smoothly get into Night of the Iguana,
yeah.
I went down to Puerto Vallarta to, and one of the things I wanted to do was enjoy the set. No, it's right outside of Puerto Vallarta, which I've been to several times, and I highly recommend for gringos who want the highlights.
Right.
The interesting thing there, Tay, and it fits a little bit of our discussion, it's not completely obvious where it is. And that's
right.
Because it's so theatrical, it doesn't bother with spectacular views, you know, long shots.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are a few, that are, but they're kind of in the background.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's what I've always liked about it is this is not a travelogue.
Right.
This is a story about human beings.
Yeah.
And as you've emphasized, mother and daughter is really the heart of this this film. And they do a beautiful job of showing the tensions between a lovely young woman and her mother, who is at a certain point in her life, where she's still lusty.
Yeah, yes, right.
Can we move to Night of the Iguana, which I can't believe hasn't had better play in the minds of people who think about Tennessee Williams?
I don't understand that either. I mean, you have surely one of the most amazing actors of all time in Richard Burton.
Whoa, what a revelation.
Gravitas, I mean.
Oh.
And then, but then Ava Gardner.
Oh.
I find that role absolutely riveting. I think she's so fascinating. Of course, I know she was tying old Frank Sinatra up in knots about that time, but that she was able to capture, I think she's a character that, my observation has been, is pretty sympathetic for people who are watching that film. And then you put Deborah Carr in, it's almost like a triangle of, obviously not just a love triangle, but also such an interesting personality.
Tay, talk about casting.
Oh.
Come on now. Can you get anybody sweeter than Deborah Carr?
Oh, no.
I mean, you're really
bless her heart.
You're really on point with her.
Oh. I think, wasn't she the one in the film with Cary Grant that and they had to meet in the Empire State Building? Wasn't she
was
the one?
Well, I'm thinking, was she the one on the beach with Burt Lancaster?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And I would like to say about Ava Gardner, I would like to emphasize your point by saying, as beautiful and as just sumptuous as she was as a younger woman, she is, as a middle-aged woman, even more fascinating.
Yes. And I think, if I may say, I think that's the thing that kind of ties these three films together in a very interesting way. They're all three.
No,
they're all three of these are Tennessee Williams, you know, his writing.
Yeah.
As you say, writing is a gay man. And writing But, you know, writing is not a woman, you know.
Yes, right.
But he manages to write these characters in what I find to be very compelling ways.
And another film that I'll recommend to you, In Your Leisure Time, with Ava Gardner.
Yeah.
If you want to see her as a really attractive woman, On the Beach.
Hmm. I don't know.
Is that the name, Wayne?
Yeah.
With Gregory Peck as the submarine commander.
I'll check it out.
Science fiction, Stanley Kubrick. Unbelievably tense, end of the world kind of stuff.
Okay.
This submarine is searching for a sound that they're hearing that sounds human.
I will check it out. I'm sorry to say I don't know it.
So she and Peck hit it off.
Yes.
And what a sweet romance.
Really?
Oh, incredible. I'm looking at this as Ava
Gardner.
Can't be beat. Anyway.
I agree that as middle age, I think she's just absolutely it's so interesting.
Yeah.
But again, another play where in a way it's connected. You have this central image, in this case, animal, the iguana.
Yes.
Tied up, they set him free, and of course Richard Burton's tied up like the iguana, and of course it's connected. And you think about that in connection with the fugitive kind. With the snake skin and the idea of shedding the snake skin.
Great.
And, of course, the rose again. For me, I guess partly because I respond to those metaphors, those images, I should say, that kind of become symbolic, kind of become a little
heavy-handed. I think so. I'll just remove kind of and just say, yes, you are absolutely. And it's what I love about him. Is that he doesn't mind having an iguana tied up and then releasing him. He doesn't mind. Well, I think we got it. Yeah, English majors are going,
Yeah, exactly, yes. Well, iguanas, you know, it's funny at Florida Atlantic University, where I'm a professor, I don't know if you know about this, but there are a lot of iguanas on the campus.
Okay.
So you kind of always feel like someday I'm going to look around and Richard Burton and Ava Gardner will be there. But you're walking around the campus, and in the wintertime, even in South Florida, it gets a little chilly. Even in Boca Raton, and one of the things is they'll be in the trees, and their blood will kind of get too cold, and it'll get just cold enough, and they'll start falling out of the trees.
No.
Yeah, that's a big thing in South Florida. So, you know, when the weather is getting chillier, the iguanas start. It starts raining iguanas. They're not harmed, as far as I know. I think they survive it okay, and once it warms up, they get up there. But you see them quite a lot. So.
Well, Taylor Haygood, I knew we would have no trouble filling up the air on our show, and you've brought back an interest I've always had in Tennessee Williams, but I liked the assignment.
Okay.
I like coming back, and I like the choices. I like the actors, of course, and I like the allegorical content of Tennessee Williams because he's not afraid to put his point out there.
No.
And so what do you suggest? Here we know it's available online, all three of these movies, others of his, like Cat in the Hot Tin Roof and so on. They're all over there. What do you suggest for people who are listening and saying, you know, is there some older films that I might want to see? You know, what can we recommend, in a sense, for him as an author?
Well, I think Night of the Iguana is a great place to start. It's something that takes the viewer into a really interesting location. You see some actors that are really at the top of their game.
Yes.
I think it's a great place to start. I would hate to rank these, but I think that's a good opening. I think it makes a lot of sense. It gets you far enough into Tennessee Williams's style and vision, but you don't have to work too hard. Personally, I probably like The Fugitive Kind a little better.
Oh, me too.
You know, I don't want to give anything away, but there's also a point to where there's something that burns down, and that's a pretty common Southern kind of trope, the idea but it's a Southern thing that in some ways is not very Southern. Joanne Woodward's a very Southern character, and she's from the South, but then you have this Italian character who has this background, but she's outside the main structure, and then you have this ultimate outlaw who is Marlon Brando, but it's just visually riveting. The most riveting, I think, one in that sense.
And I agree. And I'd like to add my non-academic comment by saying, now I know why Paul Newman fell in love with Joanne Woodward.
Yeah.
See her in this role.
Yeah.
She's sexy. She's smart. Yeah. She's fiery.
Yeah.
She's not the Joanne Woodward who becomes a bit of a matron later on in his life.
It's true. She even looks a little different.
She does. Yeah. I mean, she looks so young and bleach blonde and just. But it reminds me of how attractive even, and I hate to say this, pedophile, but I might be accused of being, what's her name, Sue Lyon? Sue Lyon. Is
You're talking about the young, the younger woman in Night of the Iguana.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, right.
I mean, really.
Well, was she in, I'm trying to think what else she might have been in.
She was in Lolita. She was.
She was in, you know, I was thinking I recognized her. I was like, what do I know her? Well, of course.
It was a distracting part of the Iguana.
Yeah, but she's gone.
She's there.
Yeah.
She's making trouble for Richard Burton's character,
as
she would for anybody, and then she's gone.
Right.
And he seems to slip into a much more serious mode to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, Tennessee Williams.
Yes.
And we'll bring the South back here anytime, brother, that you want.
Listen, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to get to talk with y'all.
Okay. Forgot to mention that you are also a magician.
Yes, indeed.
And that Wayne and I have enjoyed so much the Catalpa Trading Company's Magic and Magic up in Berlin, Ohio.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I don't think there's a better entertainment in all of Ohio than going up there into that small, eccentric town and then going into that eccentric magic show.
Well, thank you very, very much.